Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the very first BJJ Science podcast. My name's John Lee. I'm a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, and I'm a lecturer in exercise physiology and biomechanics.
And hi, everyone. I'm Dan Sly, a lowly BJJ blue belt and chartered sports psychologist.
Yeah, we're a pair of fairly average, I would say, Dan, BJJ competitors with kind of slightly above average kind of academic qualifications and background. And basically the aim of this podcast is just for us to use the kind of sports science and sports psychology to kind of try and make ourselves the best BJJ athletes that we can be. And we want to tell you guys how you can do the same, essentially.
Absolutely, John. Absolutely. Yeah. So already cover a range of things, won't it? We're talking things from physiology, biomechanics. Obviously, as we go along, we'll cover things like nutrition as best we can. Yeah. Probably get some cheeky experts in for that as well. Because judging by my diet, I certainly need to.
We'll be relying heavily on experts, yeah, I would say,
absolutely,
don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously, from a psychological perspective as well, so much of it's about mindset. So I hope can instill some information and knowledge from that perspective as well.
Yeah.
And then on top of the prey.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on top of the science stuff, we'll be doing interviews with BJJ athletes, kind of mat chats, I think we're going to call them. We'll be watching jiu-jitsu matches and kind of keeping people updated on what's going on in the BJJ and kind of MMA world, won't we, really? So previously, when Dan and I worked together as lecturers at a fine university establishment in the United Kingdom, we did the Sports Science podcast. And that was kind of a similar vibe, wasn't it, Dan? We were looking to kind of improve athletic performance, and we were looking at this kind of principle called eyes off, the individual zones of optimal functioning, and we were trying to look at how we could implement psychological strategies, supplements, like nutrition stuff, but yeah, say biomechanical, physiological stuff, how much sleep should you be getting to kind of try and hit that eyes off ready for our BJJ competitions. And let's be honest, most of our examples in that previous podcast were jiu-jitsu ones, weren't they? So we kind of thought
they really were, yeah.
We should probably just specify and focus on what we're actually interested in, which is Brazilian jiu-jitsu at the end of the day.
Let's cut out the middleman. Let's stop pretending we care about other sports and let's just focus on the sweet
talk
BJJ.
About jiu-jitsu and
the
MMA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. We will release some of those archived episodes. I think we've got some really good content in there. And we kind of, as I say, we're mainly talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anyway. And so every now and then we'll intersperse one of those in between our kind of new content. We were not fairly consistent, were we, Dan, really, with the...
to call us sporadic, John, yeah, would be very kind to us. Especially we had a lot of... Well, I'd like to say in principle, a lot of great ideas, challenges, yeah, we wanted to develop. But then we kind of would take 6 month intervals between episodes, so it's,
yeah,
hard to keep momentum
way, didn't it? I would say, yeah, we were both very, very busy academically and in our jobs and everything, so it kind of got in the way. But we're back and we're focused on this, aren't we, Dan, to bring out hopefully bi-weekly episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the first one, and so we thought we'd start with a nice kind of intro episode where we're going to give some advice based on the kind of years of jiu-jitsu training that we have done so far. Advice for beginners, essentially. Not all of these points are going to be for absolute beginners. So even if you've been training for a while, there might be some stuff in there that you still think, oh, bloody hell, I probably should have been doing that for the last 2 years or whatever. So this is just advice for BJJ. And hopefully, yeah, you will get something from that. Should I start, Dan?
Kick us off, John. Number one.
This one is for beginners. This is a surefire way to kind of get a really awkward moment when you first enter a jiu-jitsu gym, is don't walk onto the mats with your shoes on. So there'll normally be like a little reception area if you're lucky, depending on the layout of the gym, or just, you know, as soon as you walk through the door, look around for where everyone's leaving their shoes and take your shoes off before you step onto the padded area. Mm. And then a kind of more advanced one that I see a lot of people doing is, once you're then on the mat, if you need to go to the toilet, don't walk off the mat without shoes on. Walk all around the reception area, walk to the toilets barefoot, and then go back onto the mat. It's really, really bad etiquette for a start. It will really piss people off. And it spreads infections and stuff. It's really not good. So
yeah,
don't do that.
Yeah, there's no other surefire way to spread infection, then pissing all over your feet and near your rhino, then pressing some triangles. So yeah,
and then walking back in and sticking and it in someone's back. Face.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, it is rank. I trained at a gym previously where there were it wasn't a solely jiu-jitsu gym. There were boxers there quite a lot, so they would come in boxing shoes. And they would walk from their car often with their boxing shoes on, or they would go off the mat to the toilet in their boxing shoes and then come back onto the mat. And there's kind of no way of stopping that happening because we weren't there anyway. Obviously, they don't then roll around all over that mat. We're literally, you know, there'll be times when your face is smushed into that mat. You don't want someone's disgusting footprint from the toilet on that mat. As an additional little note for that, you don't want staff that you'll hear this talked about in jiu-jitsu grooms. Staff and ringworm are two of like the main really infectious things that shoot around BJJ gyms. So an added bit of advice that I'll give is Google what they look like and what their symptoms are. And if you get them, stop training immediately, go to a pharmacist and get them sorted, or a doctor if you need to, but a pharmacist can often sort them out actually. Get that sorted before you go back to training, and they need to be completely gone from your skin before you go back to training. Have you had either of those, Dan?
I haven't, John. No.
Lucky. Well,
at least if I have, I've just acknowledged it or put it to the back of my mind and just told myself I'm fine.
Yeah.
Joke, I'd never do that. I would not train. In fact, that's gonna be my first point I cover, John, which is a nice
segue. Oh, beautiful. Yeah, Google them and know what they look like. Because I went to the last competition that I went to, or no, the one before last, I saw a competitor on the side of the mat about to compete that had staff on the side of his face, bad. I was like, do I tell him? And I was like, that's not really my job. I'm about to compete. So I was like trying to get in the zone. I was like, it's not really my job to tap some white belt on the side and inform him that he has staff on his face. I think the referee should have done it, and harsh to disqualify, but so you're so really sorry you can't compete. You've got a horrendous staph infection like right on the side of your right on the side of your face. But you can't compete, sorry. But yeah, that's my one. Don't walk on the mats with your shoes on. Always take them off before you go on the mats. You can walk in your socks normally, that's normally fine. And then if you need to leave the mat, it's great to have a pair of flip-flops or something there by the side of the mat to slide on or slide back into your trainers, go to the toilet, and then take them off again before you get back on the mat.
For sure, man.
Tip one.
Don't feel bad, John. It wasn't your responsibility, but perhaps a member of staff could have told him not to.
Oh, wow.
That'll be fair. That's just me warming up, guys. We've got plenty of that to go. I digress. Anyway, yeah.
Go on, tip two, John.
And a point I want to make. Tip two is an extension, really, of that latter point, John, is just don't train if you're ill, guys. It's not admirable. It's not big. It's not clever. It takes a lot of physical toll training. You're rolling around with a lot of different people. So infections will spread. Bugs, flus, viruses, etc. It might seem admirable, but there's nothing more frustrating when you're lining up with someone who's, you know, think they're being Billy Big Bollocks by coming in where they've got a stinking cold or flu or trying to fight against.
Well, it's only a sniffle.
Not going to
miss training. Yeah. Now everyone's got it.
That was verbatim what someone I trained with once said before a massive COVID outbreak came. So a very brief point as an extension, but to be honest, and that's just one I kind of did think as you were speaking, but I really wanted to say it. So also, you know, you're not doing yourself anything. I know you've got that anticipation, you want to keep up that momentum, it's great, but in the long term it's just wiping you out for longer. It's compromising your training partners. So
better to be well and get less quality training and have training partners that are all well. And so, the quality of training will be much better. Can't agree with that one enough, really, Dan.
Mm. Thank you, John. I only seek your pleasure and your acceptance.
That
pleases me. Well, thank you.
Would
you like to bring us down the pinnacle of my career so far, please? Number three, perhaps we can go forward.
Yeah, tip number three. I will preface this by saying this is almost not worth saying, I think. But I'm going to say it anyway. Tap early when you're in a submission. It is better to give up to a submission than to injure yourself and then not be able to train for the next month or, you know, next couple of weeks. And then you've still got training for the next couple of months where it's aching. So you have to tell everyone, oh, please don't do anything on my left arm because it's still sore from the arm bar that I could have tapped to 20 times before I let it pop. Like, as I say, it's almost not worth saying because I know that 90% of the people listening, as soon as you get to the gym, the ego does take over. And I have done it. I'm not saying that I'm any better than this. I was once in a Kimura. It was actually the day I got my purple belt, and they were watching all of us blue belts roll at the grading, and someone got me in like a Kimura inside a triangle, and I was defending the triangle really well, but left my arm out. And just at the stage I was thinking, okay, I am gonna tap now. I went to tap and it went pop pop, like my elbow. And I was like, that was literally because I didn't want to look stupid in front of the instructor. He's still getting my purple belt anyway, thankfully. So yeah, I have to remind myself of this regularly, especially as you get higher up the belts. When a lower belt gets something on you, there is that bit of ego. It's like, do I want to tap to a blue belt? I'm going to go unconscious or something's going to snap. So just tap to the blue belt. Don't view training as training, not as a competition. Like, train in training and get good in training and stay healthy. Don't get injured. And then go and compete at competitions if that's what you want to do. You've got to not view every role in training as the world championship, otherwise you're just going to get broken straight away.
Absolutely. Yeah, such a great point. It's better to have tapped and lived than to not have tapped at all, John. Unless you're competing, obviously, and you want to win, then you don't want to tap. But yeah. I still say that it's a bit different in comp, though, isn't it? You've got the adrenaline running. In my last comp, I thought I was doing all right, then got caught in an armbar, and I could feel my arm hyperextended. In fact, I think the moment I tapped is when I heard people watching it audibly go, ooh, like that. Because I was like, ooh. So comp's even, it's tough in comp.
Even
I know,
in a local comp, is it? It's not worth having your arm broken in a local. No. If it's the world champ. So there's a famous fight between Roger Gracie and names escape me. The really good jiu-jitsu guy that was in MMA in the UFC for a while. Jacare Souza. Roger Gracie breaks his arm in the World Championships final. And he actually still goes on to where he tucks the broken arm under his belt and then just runs around the mat avoiding Roger Gracie for the next like minute or so. Bit of a dodgy finish to the fight. But if it's the World Championship, maybe you let something pop.
Yeah.
If it's a local comp, if it's the Wednesday evening class, like it's just not worth things breaking. And I would add to that as a little part two, apply submission slowly. Mm. You don't need to be cranking arm bars on in training. You're just going to break your training partners. No one's going to want to train with you. Like there's people in every gym, I would say, that get a reputation that people just don't want to roll with them because they're too spazzy and they try and slam everything on. Better to apply a submission slowly and someone escapes from it and you think, if I'd have gone for that, I'd have got it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, carry on. You get to know that and you get to carry on rolling without a broken training partner. So don't apply submissions quickly. Again, it's not a competition. These are your training partners and they're the people that are going to make you get better in the long run. So
exactly. And you don't want to piss off ones that are better than you as well, because then they make a sweet revenge.
But they get really angry and then they'll decide to smash you next time they roll with you.
Yeah, you're transitioning this beautifully though, mate, because it's again leads on to the point I want to make, which is learn to park your ego is what I would say. You notice, I think at all levels, look, we're all guilty of this, so-called psychologist, maybe someone who should have a good sense of awareness over their kind of emotional state and ego and part of that. We could all get caught up in that. And so it's really difficult. But firstly, I think you have to appreciate you're going to have shit days where you feel like a beginner again. Well, maybe not at your level, John, but certainly at every level.
You come
back and you think, Jesus, I'm taking a massive step backwards and stuff. And then you park it. And then you start using really unhelpful like metrics to monitor your progression. One I see particularly with white belts. And again, thinking back to my white belt years, perhaps I was well guilty of this, but making my metric for progression, or making someone's metric for progression. Oh, I heard a white belt actually say it quite recently. I say recently, a couple of months ago, I heard the line and he kind of went to the blue belt. How you doing? Well, I tapped 3 blue belts. It's like, brilliant. Good for you. But what does that mean in terms of, they might not be particularly skilled blue belts. It might be certain weaknesses of their game. Maybe they're high. And obviously, it's great if that's your monitor progression. Now, if it was a case, maybe, you're fighting from, you're continually getting dominated by them previously, and then it was someone you're up against, you've practiced certain skills, you've really focused on that personal development aspect, you've applied these new techniques you've learned and you're tapping them. Brilliant. But don't let that be the progression. Let your metric for progression be the fact I've improved my skill in that area. It's when you start doing those really unhealthy, I got another strike, that's one, you know, kind of things. People who part their ego. And a lot of the time I've noticed as well, no sweeping generalization, everyone listening, please. But if you're coming from kind of quite physical sports, or if you've naturally got quite a kind of big, formidable physique, you come in with this almost unhealthy expectation, like you should be smashing people, and don't quite like it when someone who's smaller but more skilled is getting the better of you. Remember kind of a classic, I think the kind of classic metric for blue belt. I know not every school, every gym does this, but I believe they say blue belt means you're able to kind of dominate a small, an untrained opponent, a larger untrained opponent. Sorry. So, you know, by definition, if you're adopting that, you know, if you do come in, even if you're a big guy, you lift a lot, you've got natural strength, you come from another maybe physical martial arts sport like rugby, have a lot of physical contact, don't think you've got this divine right to dominate people. And also don't get in that unhealthy habit of allowing your ego to mean you're going to kind of start relying solely on strength or brute force, because it's really dangerous and unhelpful. And I've been gyms recently where there's been big guys and with a bit of a neck crank epidemic maybe going on in certain gyms. People are really, really dangerous and something you want to avoid. And I think sometimes that is unfortunately dictated by ego. As I say, John, maybe if we're being honest ourselves at times, you know, we've been in a position maybe for our need not to want to submit to a lower belt or someone we feel we should be getting a better role.
Everyone has.
No, we're not sitting here on a pedestal being like we're perfect, but it's something to be aware of. As soon as you start feeling that ego ticking in, going, you know, I just want to beat this person or show my dominance. Yeah, a really, really unhealthy way, I think, to ultimately try. We're all guilty.
Take a deep breath, think about why you're there, and
exactly.
Try and
exactly. And then the world will be a kinder, better place.
Lower belts, you're going to tap to higher. And also, if higher belts can't tap you, what's the point in doing this sport?
Yeah,
I've had that before where there were some very athletic white belts that were getting really annoyed. So I'm a purple belt. If I can't tap you, what are we doing here? Oh. It wouldn't be worth doing. And not to say that they wouldn't then sometimes tap me with their athleticism and stuff. Like, it does happen.
I remember back to an example where we used to train at the uni. John very kindly got me into BJJ. I owe so much to my life in John, my spiritual guru in many ways. I remember we started doing it at the uni. By then, you know, I've been training a good year. I'm not saying good, but, you know, training quite consistently for a year. And we're having real newbies. And I remember a couple of them who'd get so frustrated when I'd tap them to the point, like, you know, physically, like, smacking them out. Like, why can't I beat you? I remember one actually looked at me like, I should be beating you. And you're like, I don't give a shit.
It's just
this kind of, like I say, this idea where that was his metric. And of course, if he was applying the techniques, maybe looking at my game, not if I've got much of a game, but looking at that and going, you know, okay, that's what he does, this is how I'm going to mitigate it, then great. But it was kind of just this divine right, I'm going to go in.
Just on that ego and slapping the mat, don't slap the mat when you get tapped, and definitely do not slap the mat and celebrate when you tap someone. God. That is a surefire way, especially if they are a higher grade, to really get some hard rounds later on and just piss people off. I'd never celebrate a tap in training. You don't know what the other person's doing. The other person might be thinking, I've got a real weakness in bottom half guard, so I'm going to put myself there. They put themselves in bottom half guard and you tap them and then you celebrate. And it's like, they were putting themselves don't celebrate. It makes them not want to tap, which is going to make them more likely to get broken, and it makes them want to smash you, which makes you more likely to get broken. It's just not, park the ego. Yeah. It's hard. Everyone's going to fail at some point, but try your hardest to, park the ego as much as you can. I'd agree with that, Dan.
Plus, you know, in BJJ gyms, I can honestly say, Matt, I'm sure you're the same. I've met some of the loveliest, greatest people I've ever had the pleasure of knowing, so much more in other sports, ironically a sport where you're spending most of your time trying to beat each other up and stuff, and you want to make those good, because that's so good, that's what makes it so great. The thing I loved about BJJ, I had no kind of apprehension going into new gyms, because I knew what the culture was like with people, you know, being supportive, being nice, being friendly. So you don't want to be that one with the ego and the attitude, because remember, then you're going to start to be an example and a role model to other people. Strange as it sounds, even, you know, people your own age, like, there's nothing worse than when you do walk into some gyms, you've got those people who have trying to have a bit about them, looking all stern, like they're about to go and compete in ADCC or in the UFC before a kind of, you know, a Thursday night open mat. So just bear that in mind. Don't be a dickhead, is it, mate?
Try not to be a knob. I like that one there.
Point number four, John, please enlighten us. Point number five, John.
Doesn't
please
matter.
Enlighten us.
Next tip. Do some strength and conditioning work outside of the jiu-jitsu gym is my recommendation. Specifically, I'm talking about weight training, males and females, all ages. You need to be doing some sort of weight training outside of jiu-jitsu. There's a bit of a myth in the jiu-jitsu community that you just need jiu-jitsu and that I do all of my fitness training on the mats. Like, I can get fit enough doing jiu-jitsu. And it is true that training specifically for the sport you're doing is the best way to get fit for that sport. So if you want your cardio to improve for jiu-jitsu, the best way to do that is to be consistently on the jiu-jitsu mat. No doubt about that. Not gonna dispute that at all. So definitely train jiu-jitsu. That's not what I'm saying. But for injury prevention, for longevity of your life, and for undoing some of the imbalances that jiu-jitsu will put into you, jiu-jitsu is a really crunched forward sport where you're kind of in that shrimped position. It's a very slouchy, tight sport where all of your muscles are working in very short ranges of motion. And unfortunately, that leads to certain muscles being used a lot and certain muscles not being used very much at all. And most muscles only being used in a very specific range of motion. So you'll do yourself a lot of favors if you do good weight training through full range of motion outside of the gym. We'll probably go into that how to do that and programs for that and what sort of exercise you can be doing another time. But my advice is, if you're training 4 to 5 times a week and you get people that start and they're so keen, they'll be in the gym 4 or 5 times a week. Yeah. Drop one of those jiu-jitsu sessions straight away and make it a gym session instead. Go to a CrossFit class, go to a fitness class, go and pump some iron in the gym. It can be pretty basic. Do it with safe technique. Don't get injured lifting weights. Don't try and max out your deadlift with a bent back. Safe weight training is what I'm talking about, but find the safest way that you can go and do that essentially outside the jiu-jitsu gym is my advice.
Yeah, I can agree more, man. And I mean, you'll certainly know more about that aspect than me, but I can just say from personal experience, it's great. Be your own research, like I say in these sessions, we're going to talk more about this stuff in a lot more detail. We'll get people on, we'll talk S&C in specifics, but do your initial research, guys. I know I follow a very boring strength conditioning program, but I do get down the gym, and that was just doing my own research, Googling. If you want to be a bit more fancy, do a Google Scholar search, S&C for BJJ. Read some papers, just see what they say. You start realizing, okay, so these compound lifts really helpful. So it might be just deadlifts, overhead press, glute bridges, whatever it might be. Okay, I'm just going to do some of those 2 times a week. Like I said, I have a real, real boring training program outside of a gym, but it's consistent.
It doesn't have to be the sexy stuff, does it? It can be the real simple stuff. And there are some great body weight programs out there, I would say, as well. So and body weight stuff is a good way of strengthening your joints as well. So do you remember the name of that jiu-jitsu channel, the Jiu-Jitsu Flow channel, is it?
I do, man. Yeah, Jiu-Jitsu Flow, spelled FLO. There's a guy called Ari, I think he's a BJJ brown belt based in America.
Yeah,
really brilliant. I was gonna say that, can't highlight enough, so many great bodyweight exercises. And actually, he does a thing for example, you'll practice a lot of movements like minute at a time, 10 second interval rest, then you practice a thing like kind of like double leg takedown, so you do the dynamics of it. And I can honestly say, not only does it help my cardiovascular fitness in regard to kind of that aspect, but it's also actually improved my technique of a double leg. I've gone from a solid 1 out of 10 efficiency to maybe a 2.5 or 3. And I think a lot of it's down to that, just doing that over. Yeah. And then you're doing it when fatigued as well, so that has a really additional benefit, right? You're thinking comps, not just for physical exertion, but for kind of mental exertion for those halfway through a round, you're absolutely on your knees.
The other thing is, if you increase your maximum strength in all of your muscles, you can then work at a higher force output. If you increased your bench press, you could then be pushing somewhat harder and it will be a much lower percentage of your maximum, so you can do that for much, much longer, so your muscular endurance will increase, and therefore the amount of force and pushing and pulling you can do in a jiu-jitsu round will just increase as well. And on top of that, you'll just be working muscle patterns that are going to mean that you're working joints through range of motions that you're not going to do in jiu-jitsu. Much, much healthier for you long term. And if you're 18 years old and you're not worried about long term, start now. It's going to increase your performance
Oh,
as well. So get
big
strong.
time, big time.
You'll be injured less, you'll be training more, it'll be better for you. Honest, promise.
Absolutely, man. And you'll get a sweet, sweet physique as well, guys. Swoleners for gold, sizes for prize,
Size
you
is the
know, that'll
prize,
be
you
it.
know that.
In my world, weight loss is currently for prize. Trying to get rid of some of a chub, but yeah, we'll. Sorry, that sounded like I was supporting some form of erection, John. That's not what I meant at all. Oh God, we're going to get cancelled after episode one. Can't edit this out, please, John. Stop, stop,
No,
stop.
that's going in. Right then,
Yeah.
Dan, tip number six.
I should mention as well, talking on the subject. Sorry if you can hear odd noises coming from a background. I currently have the Tyler's in, so again,
I can't
we
hear that,
recorded an
so.
episode yesterday and I had the plumbers in. Again, that's not a euphemism, that is I literally just have a lot of work going on down I was about to
Down
say down
below.
there downstairs. Okay, I digress. John,
Oh, yeah, next point.
next point is reflection. Oh, so what I mean is reflection. Take time to consolidate what you've learned, training diaries, etc. A number of ways you can do this, but so important. There is nothing more frustrating. Again, I'm talking like I'm superior in any way and I do this better than none. I don't, but I'm trying to. Nothing more frustrating, I'm sure you can appreciate, man, when you learn a really sick technique, a really useful strategy, a really useful principle, only for a week later for it to start going out of your head, then 2 weeks later you're not practicing enough, completely forgetting. You think, fuck, that was really good when I was doing that. That was really helpful. But instead I've started to try and practice flying triangles and stuff when I could go back to that technique. So think of a solid way you can do that. A number of ways you can do it. If your gym's all right with it, you might get someone just to film you doing the technique at the end of a session. Sometimes I've done it or during an open mat, you go, can you just film it? I want to remember what this technique looks like. Well, it's still good. Get that additional benefit. You're actually watching yourself perform the move, which kind of helps strengthen those kind of neural pathways for when you want to do it again. Just a simple training diary, great. If you've got handwriting like me, maybe you want to do it on a computer. To my detriment, unfortunately, I've read tennis for what's the point? What's the point?
Trying to like write a load of Brazilian and Japanese words, and then
Yeah,
you
this is either a bottom side control escape or it's a flying triangle. I can't tell the difference with my handwriting what I should be doing. So do that. If you have the capacity, maybe some simple diagrams, animations, that's really helpful. Another great way, which John you kind of introduced to, kept open yourself up a PowerPoint. Have PowerPoints for each of the different positions, top, bottom. And then insert your videos, at the very least, insert kind of 3 to 5 bullet points of that technique, then start making that branches for things. So maybe you practice maybe a side control escape. And from there, if you practice that in one session, oh, then all of a sudden you realize you've learned some attacks from Turtle Guard. Maybe one of these escapes got you into Turtle Guard, for example. That's been creating a chain, a pathway, which you can use as well. And you always, more often than not, I think you'll agree, man, even if you can't remember the technique verbatim or they teach you a slightly different way, if you do enough searching on YouTube, you'll be able to find videos of the
You'll
techniques you
find them,
practice. And
yeah.
it's a really great way to reinforce. I don't want to throw inaccurate statistics at you, but I know there's a large percentage retention information when you kind of go to it, you consolidate it straight after, then go back to it on a regular basis or kind of a week later and keep reinforcing, then it's likely to sit in your long-term memory as well, man. So regardless how you do it, whether it's just writing notes, whether it's saving videos of yourself, creating it as a bit of a BJJ flow chart, all really great ways to build on it and a really great habit to get into, I think.
Yeah, there's no doubt I have forgotten more techniques that I thought, oh, I really like that one.
Yeah.
I'm
Oh,
gonna
man.
use that. And then the week after I think, oh, what was that? 2 weeks later, like completely gone because I just
Yeah.
never wrote it down, recorded it, and never went back to it, and then
So
it's lost,
frustrating.
yeah.
I actually found myself in bottom side control last week because that's what made me think of it. And rather than trying to escape or use it, I wasted so much energy. Literally, I was just trying to keep the guy off me from progressing. And all I could think about is we learned a really good escape from here last week. What the fuck was it? What was it? What was it? What was it? And by that point,
Yeah.
about 2 minutes had elapsed. I wasn't even in a position where I was really particularly trying to get out. I was trying to get my body to remember
What it
what
was,
position, and I
yeah.
was so frustrated. And like I said, there's nothing more frustrating and stuff as well. So yeah,
Yeah, chance.
do
So if
it.
you'd written that down immediately post training,
Oh
you
yeah.
might have just been able to recall that enough to,
Yeah.
yeah, have had a go at it. But
For sure,
yeah,
man. For
completely
sure.
agree with that one, mate. And I'm
Oh,
not the best at doing it either, I
no,
must admit. I've got a
again,
training
look.
diary and I very, very
Yeah.
rarely remember to write in it.
Yeah. Everyone's a hypocrite, including us, man. And this
Yeah.
is why we're doing it, right? This is why we're doing
Yeah.
podcast as well. We want to get some accountability for ourselves. We'll be on
Yeah.
social media. We'll be posting our own kind of chamber, trying to get you all listening to kind of do the same as well, one step at a time. to make long-term habits, it's about starting with one thing. So hopefully, obviously, some of the really important rules, shoes off the mat, you know, don't be a dickhead, those are rules to instill
straight away.
But some of these more practical strategies, advice with the S&C, with a recording your training, just start doing one. Make it a habit, then stack on top of that.
And then go from there.
Number seven, John.
All right, Dan, a little quick one for me. I'm actually going to share a screen on this one. It is to watch the video called How to Defend Everything with Chris Paynes. This is a BJJ Globetrotters video. Can you see that, Dan?
I can indeed.
I've probably watched this video four times, I would say, the whole way through. It's superb, and it's like completely changed. He talks about a lot of conceptual stuff as well as some actual techniques. And it's completely changed the way I think about like guard retention, half guard, and just escaping chokes. And I like to think I'm pretty hard to get taps on, and this video is definitely a large part of what has helped me from multiple positions be pretty hard to tap. He goes through loads and loads of great stuff. You will not absorb it all in one go. So watch it, and then watch it in pieces. Watch it a couple of times and absorb it. I can't rate that video highly enough. And BJJ Globetrotters have got loads of great videos from their seminars. They do like these camps where loads of black belts teach, and then they publish all the videos. So it's like free, absolutely superb content. So yeah, can't recommend it highly enough. And that video specifically, How to Defend Everything with Chris Paynes, is a really, really good seminar. So I recommend that.
I've never watched that, man, so I'm guilty of that. So I shall give that a watch. I know one of my coaches actually
you need
recently,
to watch that one.
He showed us a really good, I won't describe it now because I won't do it justice, but he showed us a really good, it's really kind of, because it's quite unorthodox, isn't it, some of the stuff. And he showed us this really great position you can get yourself in when kind of someone passes the legs to try and get you into side control.
Yeah.
And when you're practicing it solo, you look like an absolute goon, but actually it works so well. And that's the kind of BJJ Globetrotters, a really great way of stopping advanced positions. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a watch. I'm extremely
Give that one a watch. It really is a superb video. I highly recommend.
Absolutely. Point number eight, John, is if you can, try and find a training partner is something I'd recommend. Just those opportunities for additional training. We talked about the techniques, but can be really frustrating when you're trying to practice solo. So yeah, that's just
you say training friend
get
a training friend,
and just be careful how you do that, because I was really keen. I started a new gym, I moved to a new area, and it's something I'm still trying to find a consistent kind of training buddy outside the gym. So everyone's so busy, then class you can't quite make, having a young kid it's really hard to get down sometimes. So maybe I'm more kind of stronger advocate of this, because I don't get anywhere near as many opportunities to train, but I've got that motivation to really want to train, but you just want to be able to practice with someone as well. Obviously, as a go-to, if you can't, grappling dummies are always a useful way to practice certain techniques, but difficult in some positions as well. So, you know, great way to make friends, ask if someone's occasionally available for some additional training, maybe you've got some flexible work patterns, you can go and buy a couple of mats off Amazon quite cheap. And yeah, perhaps a few extra techniques, just a nice quick snappy one back, John. But yeah, get yourself a training buddy and stuff at the gym as well, right? Bit of extra motivation, working your BJJ specific stuff.
There's no doubt when you started, that got me going to the gym more consistently, because you fire each other up, don't you? And there were a couple of times we dragged mats out before training, drilled a couple of moves, and then went to training and kind of tried to implement them.
Yeah, man, that was great. It was a lot of fun. You realize you improve so quickly as a result of that. Just those additional little bits, you know, gives you an extra opportunity to go for instructional videos. There's nothing more frustrating when you've got a great instructional and then you've only got those opportunities at the end of an open mat to watch. There you can have your laptop in front of you, you can practice, you can break down the moves together and do stuff like that. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, good one. Like that, Dan. And if nothing else, you're recruiting more people to the wonderful world of jiu-jitsu. So, spreading the love, aren't you?
Get them to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, that's it. All right then, man. My last tip then for now is another hygiene one. Clip your finger and toenails before you go to training.
Oh, yeah.
I'm compiling a gallery of pictures of scratches and cuts on my extremities from finger and toenails. If you've got long fingers and toenails, you will undoubtedly scratch your training partners. It increases infection. It really hurts. and you'll end up with them on your face, on your hands, on your legs. It's really bad. My kind of pro tip is don't just clip them, because sometimes when you clip them, you leave sharp bits. Get a nail file. And I know it sounds like we're all a bit camp, sat in our cars, filing our nails before training sessions, but I literally do that. Pro tip, keep a pair of nail clippers and a nail file in your car, the car that you normally train in. And if you get caught out and you have forgotten to trim your nails, do it before you go in and then file them so they're actually smooth. Maybe drag them across your face before you go in and make sure there's no sharp bits, because you'll hurt your training partners, and it's really not pleasant when you're getting scratched. I've had them on my forehead, and you kind of feel it mid-roll. I've had big scratches like down the back of my neck that then your gi rubs on. Like, it's horrible. So please trim your fingers and nails. And while we're talking about hygiene, brush your teeth before you go to training. Again, have a toothbrush in the car, or at least chew some gum. Have a shower if you can after work before you go to training, or if it's a morning session, shower first. Absolute minimum, if just timing doesn't work, a spray of deodorant before you go in. It's going to make you a training partner that people are actually going to want to roll with. We've all had days where we've accidentally gone stinking after work and haven't brushed our teeth since having five coffees that day or whatever. It happens, but you don't want to be the smelly training partner.
You want to, smelly, you want to be fresh.
Scratchy training partner.
You want to be fresh, not fresh.
Fresh.
I can agree more. Yeah, and also, recently, actually, as well, good point with clippings. Really, really keep it under control. I mean, mine weren't even out of control at all, my fingernails, but maybe they're slightly longer than they should have been, was rolling with someone the week before last, and ended up getting my fingernail caught in his gi, and it pulled that sucker back. And that's a pain you... it made me want to tap. I was like, I can't tap to that because it's a kind of accidental thing.
It's
but
a
you
fingernail
know,
tap.
Yeah, the whole fingernail turned black. You know, like, oh man, thumbnail technically. I was just like, and it's just that little bit too long, so it makes all the difference. Yeah. So
they don't have to be long at all, actually. It only has to be a couple of days. I don't know if my nails grow ridiculously fast, but I probably have to trim mine a couple of times a week.
Yeah,
otherwise, they just get that little bit long enough to start catching things, as you say, a gi or someone's skin. So, last one for me. Yeah, trim your nails, file them. Have stuff in the car ready to go, brush your teeth and give yourself a squirt of deodorant, or preferably have a shower before you train.
Just practice good hygiene as well. Wash that gi regularly as well. Final one for me, John, and hopefully a nice motivational one for everyone. It's just keep showing up. That's my last bit of advice. And I'm saying this to someone after the last year and a half, been very blessed. Like I said, brought a little one into the world. I mean, a kid, I don't mean I've been kind of just... I don't know what else I'd mean by that.
Yeah, I don't know what else we mean.
But yeah.
It's pretty much all that saying means.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a small person I've randomly invited into my house. It's things like that. Life events will happen, and some days you won't train for weeks, months. Obviously, different responsibility shift, but just always going with that intention that you're going to keep trying and keep persevering and keep showing up. I think Joe Rogan in his podcast said that more than once. And it's such a simple philosophy. It was like, you know what? Just keep showing up. You show up enough for long enough. You'll get better. You'll improve. You know, I'm by no means pulling up any trees in regard to my jiu-jitsu, but Christ, I think compared to when I started, or maybe even, this time 2 years ago, I've improved a great deal, and I've been no way training anywhere near as much as I wanted, but I've kept on showing up when I can, even if it's sporadic as well, trying to park that ego. Recently a lot of people were promoted, you see people start to overtake you start to realize your place of a line starts to go down. She hasn't been as much, they've been going like six times a week. Again, park it. I'm just going to keep showing up. I'm getting better. That's the main thing. I know it's easier said than done, but I guess it goes back to that idea of that metric, going by your own progression, knowing you're getting better. The best way to get better is to keep showing up. When you show up more, you get competent. When you get competent, you get more competent. You get more confident. When you get more confident, magic happens, John.
At least the light side, I would say, just to add to that, I think that's a really good point. As we said, we're both very busy people. We've got jobs. We've been working on kind of academic qualifications and stuff. So there have been times when I've really struggled to get to training. So I've been training twice a week for long periods of time. And you can still improve. And I think sometimes people will say, you need to be in the gym three times a week or you're not going to improve. And I think sometimes that just puts people off. I can't. And if I can only get there once a week, it's not worth it. I'm not going to improve. You will. Even if it's only once a week, you will improve. It's going to take you longer. Your progression will be slower. But just keep going as much as you can, and don't let people, you're not even coming four times a week. Like, you're never going to improve like that. You will just keep coming. Yeah. I'm testament to that, because there have been long periods where once, twice a week has been my average.
Yeah, and in the time I've known you, John, obviously you started off, I think, quite literally at the place I am, and 4 or 5 years later, you're now sitting here as a brown belt, and
blue belt, no stripe, I think, when you started, wasn't I?
Yeah. So you've had to, maybe even earlier in your journey, but you've had to, and like you said, a lot of that's been sporadic training. We've been testament to that, because for a long time we were training together, at least for a year of that, where we weren't able to get down as much as we want, but you're still there as well, yeah. That's an important point. For something else to add to that, but I've forgotten it was going to be a magical bit of advice, but maybe I'll save that for next time once I remember.
Yeah, beautiful. Drop that in when you remember. Yeah, and I think that's a great point to end on, Dan. Just keep going, man. Just keep going.
And throughout these episodes, we hope to help you keep doing that.
Yeah.
We will be your Sherpas up the mountain of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and we'll hope to hopefully give you some tips along the way that can kind of make the process easier for you, and can kind of, even if you're not looking to become a great competitor, just look to make the most of your jiu-jitsu training, essentially, and get you more recovered so you feel like you can train more and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, we hope you enjoyed that, guys. Just a couple of little tips for everyone, really, but especially for beginners. We might come back with a part two of this at some point, because I know we've got a couple of other points each, haven't we, Dan, that we want to drop in at some point. Subscribe to the podcast, guys, on your usual podcast provider. You can get us at bjjscience@outlook.com if you've got any suggestions, any questions that you want to send us. Like us on Twitter and Instagram, and bjjscience on YouTube as well. So, like, subscribe everywhere, send to your friends. You'll do us a great favor on all of the algorithms.
Absolutely. Please, and we can only thank you by delivering more exquisite content.
Sweet content. Sweet. Yeah, we'll see you on the next one.
See you in the next one. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
All the best. Bye.